I'm Lucas.
And I'm Julia.
We are the European Union Youth Delegates at the United Nations.
If you want to know more about what's going on in the world from a UN and EU perspective,
listen to thought-provoking talks in our podcast, Who Rules the World? Welcome to this episode of Who Rules the World podcast. In this episode, our guest is EU Commissioner for Equality, Helena Dalli.
Helena Dalli, former Member of Parliament of Malta, Minister for European Affairs and Equality, Minister for Social Dialogue, Consumer Affairs and Civil Liberties, Opposition Shadow Minister for Public Administration, Equality, Public Broadcasting and National Investment, Parliamentary Secretary for Women's Rights in the Office of PRIM. Currently, you are primarily focusing on strengthening Europe's commitment to inclusion and equality in all its senses, irrespective of sex, racial or ethnic origin, religion or belief, disability, age or sexual orientation, and many other issues. Welcome, Commissioner.
Hello, I'm very happy to be with you today on this beautiful sunny day.
And we are very happy to have you. Commissioner, you are heading EU delegation at this year's Commission on Status of Women, and the focus is on poverty. How does economic poverty disproportionately impact women and girls, particularly in areas such as access to education, employment opportunities and healthcare, and services including female hygiene products?
Well, as Antonio Guterres said, poverty has a woman's face. And throughout my work as minister and as commissioner, we have been speaking about the feminization of poverty. And in some cases and in some countries, this is because of, you know, traditional norms, as in the girls are not sent to school, or if they are sent to school, limited hours because they are expected to participate in household chores, for instance. But in other countries where girls go to school, and actually we can see also that more girls, more women than men are graduating from university, we can still see that there are difficulties there because of work-life balance. I mean, even if you have studied and you can work, you can still fall in the bracket of poverty, because we still need a lot of structures for work-life balance, for care work. In fact, in the European Union, there are nearly 8 million women who are qualified and who can be in the labor market, who may actually be in the labor market, but cannot because of care responsibilities of young children, maybe, or of a child with disability or with elderly parents. So they are not in the labor market, and they depend on someone for their income. And this is also linked to why certain women stay in abusive relationships. And that is also linked to poverty, because if you are not financially independent, it is more difficult for you to leave an abusive relationship. So there are all these things. And also they will be even poorer when they get old, because they haven't contributed for a pension. They've been doing informal work, which is not registered. But who's going to do this care work if these 8 million women are not doing it? And that is why member states, and not only European Union member states, but UN states, all the countries in the world, must invest in structures for work-life balance, for care, so that women can have the choice whether to stay at home and care for their dependents, or but they shouldn't be made to choose. This is my point here. They should be able to do both if they want to, because there is a support structure for them, which in many countries this is lacking. So we go from one point whereby it is because in a particular country not a lot of attention is paid for the education of girls, but then even when there is this attention, which is in many countries, then we also come to this point where in spite of the qualifications, in spite of the experience, in spite of all that they can contribute, they are not in the labor market because of these responsibilities. And also, this is wrong because many countries, most countries, invest a lot in the education of women. And so, would you invest in something which you know you're not going to get a return? You wouldn't do it. But a lot of investment goes in that education, and the government will not be getting a return for it. So it's also a waste. You know, so really, poverty is very, it really has a woman's face.
Thank you for your answer and focusing on investment in poverty and education. UNICEF reports that, for example, in Afghanistan, it is estimated 3.7 million children are out of school and 60% of them are girls. What can we do to change this globally?
There's a lot of stereotypes. You know, it's a most of the time it's a question of culture. We were talking about, you know, the decision to send the boys to schools and not the girls. So there shouldn't be that option. Every child should be sent to school. But this is also a question of stereotyping, because in the minds of many people, especially in traditional societies, in rural societies, they have in their minds that the girl is the one who will bear the children, who will stay at home, take care of the family, nurture the family, and all that. You know, so we cannot do enough to change this stereotype. Every single human being who is born in this world should have the option and the opportunity to reach his or her full potential, whether it is a girl, whether it is a boy, and there's so many other characteristics that you can, may have a disability, you may have a different sexual orientation, you know, so every person who is born should have this opportunity to reach his or her full potential. But discrimination doesn't allow this. And what you are talking about in Afghanistan and in other countries, it is a question of discrimination, because you are discriminating if you decide that girls don't go to school. Girls have the right, and governments have the obligation to see, and the families have the obligation to see that these girls are sent to school. You know, so by addressing stereotypes and addressing culture also, because sometimes it is cultural, we must make governments understand that we must give the opportunity to everyone, to every child that is born, to have this opportunity, because everybody has a talent and everybody can develop that talent. But not if we discriminate against that person, if we do not allow that talent to come out, to flourish, to really be strong. And this is the way. There is also the economic argument for this.
Thank you. And we had this discussion with Julia yesterday about this economic argument that women equality is a win-win for everyone.
Exactly.
Economic empowerment is often cited as key solution to addressing gender-based poverty. What initiatives or policies have shown promises in empowering women economically, particularly in low-income and marginalized communities, and how can these approaches be scaled or replicated worldwide?
Well, first of all, every country must have a strategy on how to address this. And you start by, you know, investing in education and training, and then in designing career paths for girls and women without stereotyping. Because, for instance, on the 11th of February was International Day for Girls and Women in Science, which I'm proud to say, as Minister for Malta, I was the sponsor, the promoter for for this day, and it came about, and we've been celebrating or commemorating it, really, because there's not much to celebrate, commemorating it for the past 10 years. And one of the reasons why we did this is because we need so much to have girls and women in science. And many times women end up in poverty, even if they are working, because they are in low paid jobs. For instance, in care work, 90% of the workers there are women. And as we know, care work is one of the least paid jobs. On the other hand, in, for instance, artificial intelligence, only 30% are women, okay? And these are the highest paid jobs. So also that leads to the gender pay gap, you know? So every country must have policies and even legislation in order to see that each and every citizen has access to education and to career paths which he or she chooses. But also we have to be careful here, because sometimes even guidance in school, they do not steer girls towards the sciences. And that's why we put the spotlight on this day, on the 11th of February, for girls and women science, to show how much we need. And there's a conference every year, and every year it has a different theme, because the science areas are vast, you know, and we try as much as we can to have women in these areas, not only because women are good, but we don't hear much about how many women excel in the sciences. Also because even though the numbers of women in science are increasing, there's still a very, very small number of women in science in leadership positions. So not many role models, again, for the girls who are to choose the subject. But it is all in the mind of those who take certain decisions, because it's not true that girls are not wired for the sciences. You know, it's when we put them to the test, when we teach them science, they do brilliantly. You know, so it's about strategies and having, you know, long-term planning in where we want to go, and to, you know, draw girls to other subjects which up to now they have been looked at as not being girls' subjects, maybe even because men wanted to keep the domain because it's a very good domain.
How does the intersectionality of gender and other factors such as race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and disability contribute to unique experiences of poverty and inequality? And what steps can be taken to address these intersection forms of discrimination and disadvantage?
In fact, women, we are talking about women here, are not a homogeneous group. Intersectionality is very important. In fact, in all our strategies and legislation in the European Union, we look from the intersectional lens. Intersectionality is of the essence, and that is why it is important, especially for women who are in the poverty bracket, because their realities are not the same as the realities of other women who have other realities, who have other problems, such as what we were saying, for instance, the need for structures to balance work and life would be the difficulties of an educated woman who wants to be in the labor market. But then for a woman who has a disability, maybe her main problem is accessibility. Accessibility even to the labor market, but maybe she also has the difficulty of physical accessibility or accepting a person with a disability in your company, in your firm. So again, that makes it a problem of accessibility. Then racial discrimination. We have our strategy, our anti-racist strategy. For these reasons as well, we are not the European Union, and the European Union is multiracial, and you have to know and understand where the different people are coming from in order to be able to cater for their needs. You know, so it's not easy to make policies and to legislate if in your mind you are thinking, okay, women, let's see what women need. No, women are different, as are men. You know, so intersectionality, when it comes to leadership, when it comes to policy making, when it comes to legislation, is of the essence.
What is your preferred outcome of this year's Commission on Status of Women? And what's the most important thing world leaders should do right away for women and girls living in poverty?
Yes, I think I'm very glad that this topic was chosen this year, especially in the context of the wars which are going on around the world. Closer to the European Union, of course, there's the aggression on Ukraine, and also what is happening in Gaza, that is very close to home. And we can see, as a result of these wars, as much as we help, and the European Union does help a lot in these situations, and it is very important that we continue to do that. But this is also directly linked to poverty, because many families are impoverished because of war. And I just gave these two examples because there are many other wars going on around the world. This year we have concentrated on poverty, but I would also like to throw the spotlight on poverty in relation to war. And I think that is something we should really work on in a genuine way, and not saying one thing and doing other things, if you understand me. All wars should be condemned, because there are innocent lives being taken, and that is completely, completely wrong. And if you don't lose your life, the probability is that you will be impoverished. This poverty is inflicted by those leaders who decide to go to war. This is not just happening because there are not the necessary structures, you know, for women to have decent jobs or all that we have been talking about. But this is a decision by leaders of different countries to decide to go to war and stay in that war. And if you are not dead, you are poor. That is the result of the war.
Yeah, I believe that the money they spend on guns,
armaments, yes,
would be better spent on equality and social
justice.
And that
justice. Is what I meant when I said we should be honest. And really, these realities which human beings like us are living, I think we really should think about these things and be more vocal. And that is why I'm linking the theme of poverty for this year's CSW, and how we can link it to the wars which are going on.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, for staying with us. We wish you a nice continuation of the CSW. Thank you again.
Thank you. It was lovely talking to you, and I really appreciate to see young people who are engaged politically and who are giving your bit to change the world for the better. Thank you.
This was an episode of the Who Rules the World podcast. For the new episodes, tune in to the Spotify or other platforms.